Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Rain Marine Electronics.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. That's Joey Pyburn, Rob Ensley to my right. Matt Nelson back in our Seattle studio, and I'm Tom Nelson. Thanks for tuning in this morning. You know, it's just not fair to call it road pizza. Okay, it just doesn't give it the respect that it garners. It's roadkill. Okay, all right. Don't giggle. Don't laugh. Ashley Nicole Lewis is now the maitre d'hotel of the Roadkill Cafe. Why is that, Ashley Nicole Lewis? Why is that?
You know, I never knew that this would be such a calling for me, but I got a great opportunity to help a friend out with a roadkill salvage that she got a call for. And I thought, you know, why the heck not? And whereas I don't think I ever set out to be the roadkill queen, if you will, but the idea of salvaging meat is something that really is always heavy on my heart, and as it is for most of us that are, you know, enjoy the outdoors, hunters, fishers, we don't like to see anything go to waste.
I think last year there was somewhere well over 1,000 people that called in their roadkill privileges around the state and took advantage of this, whether it be elk or deer or whatever. So you said somebody got notified that there was a roadkill in the area. How'd you guys know about this deer that was on the side of the road and get notified about this?
Yeah. So my friend has a group of buddies that were out hunting, and they had gotten elk, which good for them. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. But at the time they had, I think, a neighbor call and say, "Hey, deer was just hit. Can you come take care of it?" So they just happened to know somebody. And then they called a friend and said, "Hey, we can't take care of this animal right now because we're elbow deep in elk. Can you take care of it?" And then I got a phone call saying, "Hey, I'm doing this." And I kind of inserted myself in the situation and said, "Yeah, I'd like to be a part of that too." So, I mean, really, this animal came about because, you know, someone who knew somebody knew that the animal was hit and hit very mm-hmm. recently, which is a really, really key thing here when you're salvaging roadkill. So we knew that the animal hadn't been there long. And in fact, when my friend got there, she had to dispatch the animal because the poor thing was still alive, and then made it into something useful.
How do I become part of the roadkill network that you have going?
First off, I think we need to work on.
I want the call.
We need to work on branding. Okay, maybe we call it wildlife salvage. Okay,
wildlife salvage.
Yeah, let's call it.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah, it is wildlife salvage. There we go.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that it's kind of stigmatized because of exactly what Tom just said. Like, we think of it as roadkill. We've all seen it. We drove down the road. There's an animal laying on the side of the road. Like, oh, it's a roadkill. Makes us sad because we see something go to waste. But really, looking at it as salvaging is a wonderful thing because it changes your perception of it. So when someone says, "Hey, I salvaged this animal. Do you want some backstrap?" Sounds a lot better than like, "Hey, I've got this roadkill. Can I slap it on the plate for you?" It's a lot different. But in terms of getting other people involved, like, how do you become a part of the chain? I mean, really kind of changing the stigmatization around it is a part of it. And just talking with your friends about it, like having, you know, you can go and print out the permit. Or I think like once you know there's an animal, you can get a permit, like check the regulations for your specific like state and area. But kind of having that on hand and on your mind, so when you do come across this and you can call a couple buddies up, then, you know, it's on people's minds. And most people are more than willing to come and help because, like I said, we all hate to see these animals go to waste.
Oh, for sure.
If you're having somebody over for dinner, you don't need to tell them it's roadkill.
I always do, though.
Do you?
I always do.
I'm going to set up a meetup group. We're going to get a meetup group and maybe get a Facebook group together. Ultimate network.
Ashley, I was a early adopter to this.
He was. Joey was in
early. I think
early.
I might have got the first one.
He did. Literally within a week of them announcing this, Joe calls me. He's like, "Dude, I'm on the side of the..." Wasn't it an elk or something?
No.
Well,
I've got an elk.
You got an elk, too.
I got an elk.
Yeah.
I 90, but I got a deer like within the first week. I was on my way to Bellingham, run into my cold storage. So I was already in one of my freezer trucks. I saw a truck hit this little buck, and it just clipped him in the head. Perfect.
Wow.
Like perfect. I just pulled over. The guy just kept driving. I pulled over, threw it in the back of my freezer truck, turned it on, got my first one, and I make sure to tell anybody that comes to dinner that they're eating roadkill, so that they, after they're done, they're like, wow,
this is a
really
whole
good
new direction we're going.
It
here.
Is.
We need to try to get on tips and tactics and how do I stalk the buck down in the woods.
Well, Rob and I were joking.
Dim your headlights.
We went and
turned down the stereo.
We went and hiked way back into the backcountry to shoot our deer, and I was like, we could have just spent like 4 days driving around the state.
Oh, yeah.
Probably come home with seven deer.
Yep. So get a coffee, wherever you want to.
So, Ashley, what are the nuts and bolts of it, though? Once you see a critter, it's a road that you drive every now and then, so you know if something's, we'll use fresh or not, right? What happens then? You stop, you pull over, throw it in your rig, and then what?
Yeah, so, like, of course, dispatching the animal if that needs to be done. If you don't already have a permit, get a permit, figure out what the permitting laws are in your area before you go ahead and start loading something up. But, you know, we don't like coming on to an animal that's just been hit and is, like, clearly in pain and needs dispatched. And if you do come across that situation, this is kind of a way that you do know that your kill is more recent, if you will. So if you're coming across the salvage animal that is already dead, it's really important that you try your best to find out when this animal was hit, like how long has it been there? Because, you know, if it's a warm day and it's been out for a long time, like this is kind of a dangerous situation. So always be sure, don't take chances with this sort of thing. Like USDA does not recommend that you source all of your meat from the side of the road. There are some precautions to take. But from this point on, load up the animal and then go through the process of figuring out what the damage is. For us of us who are hunters, we know what bloodshot looks like. We know what damaged meat looks like. But I had a lot of people reach out to me since I posted the YouTube video that we did on the salvage and say, hey, I'm not a hunter, but I'm totally down with doing this. How do I tell meat that isn't good against meat that is good? And once you start getting into some of that area that's been hit, it's very, very obvious where the meat should be kind of an even consistent color. Now you have this like purpley, really dark red, kind of like tattered up looking meat. This is not stuff that you want. You want to cut this away. Don't take chances here. But everything else that you can slice from the bone, these you can start collecting off of the animal, be it, you know, different hindquarters, neck pieces, depending on what the animal looks like. But, I mean, having a good – and back to the roadkill salvage tips, if you have, like, a good set of knives in the vehicle with you, you have some game bags, that sort of thing, you can be more prepared for the situation.
A roadkill kit. There we go.
Hey, Ashley.
This is going the wrong direction.
We got dibs. We got dibs on that, Ashley. You stay away from that.
Hey, Ashley, just so we're clear with our listeners, you cannot dispatch the animal yourself. That is against the law in Washington. If you find an animal that has been hit and is still alive, you need to call 911 or the game warden, have them come out and they dispatch it. Legally, you are not allowed to dispatch
that way. We're
not
out there shooting them off the side of the road.
Right.
And whatnot. There's going to be somebody that's going to take advantage of that.
Yeah,
of course.
No kidding. And then, so then you just get online. If the critter's down, you just throw it back your rig. You get online and you print out the permit right then and there.
Yep.
Yeah. Perfect. Yep. All right, Ash, before we let you go, kid.
Quick. And it's usually the police department that helps you with that generally. Yep. But yeah.
What's going on on our beloved Olympic Peninsula on the salmonid front?
Yeah, so lots of salmon in the rivers right now. Coho have been in for a little bit, but we had a really nice good rain. It blew a lot of rivers out. Things are dropping in really, really nicely right now. I chatted with my friend Ruben, who ran a couple trips the last few days on the Quinault, and I mean, it's nice limits. There's big fish, lots of fresh fish still coming in. The cool thing about the peninsula is a lot of those fish aren't traveling super far, like, for example, the Quinault. Fish are kind of just headed up to the Lake Quinault, that sort of thing. So lots of good opportunities up and down the coast. I certainly wouldn't rule out opportunities for coho. Something that people don't always realize is while other areas in the Pacific Northwest, the coho run starts to like diminish, we get fish on the peninsula all the way through Christmas time. We call them Christmas coho. So don't discount and stop. And don't stop bringing your hardware out and things that you're using to target coho anytime soon. Lots of good stuff going on.
Yeah, some of those late coho are monsters, too. There can be just some whopper coho come out of the Queets, the Quinol, all that stuff, over 20 pounds, you know. Those late coho. Now, you got some fresh venison in the freezer. What's your favorite way to cook some of those steaks, Ashley?
Oh, boy. I have discovered my love, my true love in this life, which is a cast iron, like a good quality, well-seasoned cast iron pan. Mm-hmm. And so picking out some of these pieces, whether it be backstrap, tenderloin, whatever, giving it a really nice, probably bacon-influenced sear in my cast iron, and then like finishing it in the oven, maybe doing a little bit of a smoke sort of thing. But I'm really, really, really interested and really enjoy cast iron searing all of my meats and steaks. So good. That's how I'm doing my thing. Even salmon,
oil.
You can do it with salmon too.
Yeah. We hit it in the sous vide for 2-3 hours and then just sear the crap out of it in the cast iron skillet and over the top.
Yeah. Yeah. I had tenderloin last night in the cast iron.
Oh, so good.
Unreal. I ate the whole thing.
In one bite.
And here's the thing. You guys are out there like in the woods, you know, jumping around, checking out fish. A lot of folks are out looking for deer, but everyone should be looking down at their feet and looking for that forest gold. Chanterelles are everywhere
right now.
And before it freezes, this is the time to be out there looking for them. So you can have a little bit of, you could salvage an animal. You could sear it in your cast iron pan, put a little bit of chanterelle on the side, and this is a good Pacific Northwest bounty, if I've ever heard of it.
Now we're talking.
I just, oh, man. Hey, we've had a couple chanterelle feeds this fall already.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely phenomenal.
Good.
She's Ashley Nicole Lewis, Bad Ash Outdoors on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Ashley, thank you so much for your time. Keep in touch, kid, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thanks,
fellas.
See ya. All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Coming up next, a critically acclaimed, award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as Redneck Sports Center, is brought to you by Truck Vault, the leader in secure vehicle storage.
Deer hunters in Washington are getting a gift from Mother Nature they haven't seen in decades. The weather this weekend in Chelan and Okanagan counties, for instance, is supposed to be downright frosty. Lows at Washington Pass on Highway 20 in the North Cascades this weekend are supposed to be well below zero. At Stevens Pass to the south, we'll also see frosty conditions and snow. Nighttime temps in Winthrop in the Medhow Valley will dip into the mid-teens, and all that cold air will spread across all parts of eastern Washington. All this cold weather and snow will certainly drive some of the largest bucks in the state out of the high country from now until the last day of the season on October 27th. Anthony Steen from Skagit Arms up in Burlington has been hunting the Okanagan Valley for years and has been getting reports of mule deer already moving down into the summer range, and into the Medhow Valley already. If you have been on the fence about deer hunting, you might take a long, hard look at heading out this next week, as the conditions simply can't be any better.
And we're talking 3 decades. Easily, since we've seen this. Waterfowl hunt through the weekend, then fires back up again on Wednesday. Waterfowls will get through this weekend to shoot duck statewide before taking Monday and Tuesday off. The season will resume again on Wednesday, October 28th. A brief closure allows the waterfowl season to carry on until January 31st. Shelby Ross from Duck Taxi on Pottles Reservoir says a good mix of teal, widgeon, mallards, and pintail around, and he thinks the cold weather this weekend could move some northern birds into the area. Up in the Skagit Valley, Kevin John of Holiday Sports in Burlington had a similar report, says there's plenty of local birds in the area, and shooting has been decent so far for ducks. The snow goose hunting last weekend was excellent in the Skagit Valley, and Kevin says he heard a lot of juvenile birds mixed in, and the juveniles definitely make that snow goose shooting better. Like all the waterfowl surveys, the snow goose count was canceled this year due to COVID. The numbers have been well above the long-term average, though, and biologists expect another excellent flight of snow geese this year.
WDFW just gave the go-ahead to increase the salmon limits on a few popular southwest Washington rivers. Anglers can now keep 2 hatchery silvers on the Washougal from the mouth to Salmon Falls. That will stay in effect through the end of the year. The Lewis River from the mouth to Colvin Creek will also see its silver limit bump to 2 hatchery silvers per day through the end of the year. And anglers can now keep hatchery Chinook on the Cowlitz River with a 2-fish daily limit. The fishing boundary below Barrier Dam has also been moved within 100 feet of the fish ladder to allow more access for banked anglers.
Bob Buchanan from SMI Shellfish Gear and Bomek Tackle. Dennis Sumner says they can't stock squid jigs fast enough at tackle shops around the Sound right now. That's because the squid fishing in Puget Sound is as good as it's been in years. From Edmonds to Des Moines to Tacoma and Bremerton, limits of squid are coming over the railing at docks and piers everywhere. Some are even finding limits of squid during the day from boats out on the Sound. Tally Scrampin down at Point Defiance Boathouse in Tacoma echoed the same report that squid fishing has been lights out off the pier at the boathouse for the last couple of weeks. Tally said folks are showing up at the pier early to secure a spot on the rail, and many evenings it doesn't take them long to get limits. The limit on squid in Puget Sound is 10 pounds per person, and everyone has to have their own container.
More tentative clam dig schedule. The next tentative razor clam jig scheduled for the coast are October 31st through November 3rd, and yet another round of digs set for November 13th through the 19th. With the cancellation of spring digs, there is now an unprecedented pile of razor clams on those coastal beaches. WDFW will announce another final go-ahead for these digs a few days ahead, a time after test results show the razor clams are safe to eat. As with other recent clam digs, WDFW is also encouraging folks to practice distancing while they're out clam digging, as these digs can draw thousands of people to the coast.
Pheasant hunters get to hit the field in eastern Washington today for pheasants. With the cold weather sweeping through the state, conditions should be just about perfect. Rifle elk hunters will hit the field on the east side of the mountains starting on Halloween, October 31st, with that season running through November 8th in most units. With the cold temps and snow in the mountains, it could be one for the books this year. Westside rifle elk hunters will have to wait till November 7th for a crack at a rosy elk on the west side of the mountains.
This Redneck Sports Center has been brought to you by the great folks at Truck Vault in Cedro Woolley. Check out your next secure vehicle storage system at truckvault.com.
Yeah, man, there's nothing that drives the action in the fall like a hard edge like this that we're seeing. I mean, we're talking snow in the passes and going over the North Cascades last week. I've never, on the open weekend hunting season, seen a foot of snow on the side of Washington Pass.
Yeah, we had a little snow. We were at about 4,000 feet. We had snow on us, too.
Yeah,
on
Saturday night,
a little bit of snow. Yep. And plenty of snow up high. I mean, we drove across, the North Cross, and there was snow everywhere. It's been a long time since we've seen that. And yep. I tell you what, it's driving the bird hunting. It's driving the deer hunting. It's going to drive the elk hunting. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. Get out there and definitely participate. Now's the time. And you can learn a lot right now, too.
Yes.
You can get, if you're on the fence about going out, this is the year to get out and learn something, because there's going to be a lot of animals moving around.
Yeah.
You might go out, in a typical year, it's tough, man. It's just really, it's a grind hunting in Washington.
It is.
We put the work in. But this year, there's going to be a lot of animals moving around, and you can lay some groundwork for success in coming years, just my opinion.
And that's the key for new guys. It sucks to go out there every year, and last year I saw a doe.
Yeah.
I mean, a year like this, you're gonna see some bucks. You're going to see animals.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be moving.
Mm-hmm.
And typically...
That hunt sometimes opens up October 10th and it's 75 degrees.
Oh, for sure.
And you're kicking grasshoppers out from underneath you. Yeah. Ain't gonna be no grasshoppers this time around, man.
Yeah.
It's gonna be interesting. But like you say, it takes animals and you watching the animals through the territory, and not just that, but just, they're easier to spot in that snow.
I mean,
the muleys blend into their habitat so magnificently. Well, you put a little whiter cast to that habitat, and they're a lot easier to see. And it makes not just a little difference. It makes all the difference in the world. It
Definitely.
Really does.
Yep.
Not to mention that. And all those fresh tracks, too. I mean, you know how old every track is, especially when it's fallen. Now, you got to dress for it. You got to be prepared for it.
Well,
right?
We were talking about that, too. And I mentioned 60s hunter guy earlier in the show.
Yeah.
Like, what did the 60s hunter guy look like out there wearing probably Filson pants?
He looked
either
tough.
A Pendleton or a Filson jacket, and wore the same red and black plaid jacket
for years. I had a pair of Herman Survivor boots. You remember Herman Survivors?
I don't.
No.
Were they kind of like pack boots? Were they black?
Yeah, they were. Or the brown ones were really upscale, right?
Yep.
But in every single episode or every single issue of Outdoor Life magazine, it was the Herman Survivor ad, dude. Yeah, Herman Survivor boots.
And again, we've sleeping. I got a brand new QU10. It's just sweet. I got my REI pad. I got a 0-degree first light bag. I got all this fancy stuff. We're texting through our in-reaches.
We have Onyx on our phones.
Oh, yeah. 60s hunter guy would have slept with his head on a granite rock because basalt is kind of, you know, it's kind of scratchy. It's got pokey stuff on it. So he would select a nice smooth piece of granite to put his head on at night when he slept on the mountain because he's going to chase a buck all night with his Pendleton blanket, roll up in the blade. That's the pad, too.
Yeah.
Now we're so spoiled.
Oh, we
got
are.
Sitka gear. We got rain gear. We got.
Did you ever have any Metzger maps?
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I piles of them. I just threw them away.
Yeah, exactly.
Got rid of
them. Yeah. I had a pack full of.
We got Onyx on our phones.
Oh,
we have tracks on our phones. So we set up our tracks. We can see where. Oh, yeah. We went right up here, Joe. Boom, boom, boom.
If
right
you get
there.
Lost nowadays,
yeah, you're just
you deserve
stupid.
To be lost.
You're too stupid to even
and
be
I hope
out there.
They never find you.
Well, with that, we just ran over our listeners with a welcome. Hey, welcome. Come on hunting. But, boy, if you ever get lost, you're on your own.
There's no excuse for getting lost. Right. No.
Our next guest is a real nice guy, not like Joey, mean Joey Pyburn. Foster Barthlow, go check out trapshootingbros.com. He's Browning's master wing shooter, and he's next here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the Renaissance Marine Group.com's wheelhouse, brought to you by Weldcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Well, really proud to have our next guest right here. Log on to trapshootingbros.com. He's Browning's master wing shooter, and he's right here, Foster Barthlow. Welcome to the show, man. Thanks for taking the time out for
us. Hey, Foster. How you doing, buddy?
Foster.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, you know, it's opening day of pheasant season in eastern Washington. It's kind of our wild bird season on the east side. It's the big one for us. And I thought it'd be great to reach out to you, a world champion trap shooter, and might as well be a world champion bird shooter as well, and just get some tips on taking one of these birds down, you know, shot placement, swing, patterning your shotgun, any kind of tips you can throw out there for folks. To get them dialed in on getting a limit of pheasants here this weekend in Washington?
Yeah, I'd kind of say the first thing is know where your shotgun is shooting. You know, if you have a chance to go out, pattern it with the exact brand of ammo that you're using. A lot of times, I mean, just like a rifle, ammo can be different, you know, and shoot differently for rifles. And same thing goes with shotguns. So take out that Browning ammo, Winchester ammo, whatever you're using, and go pattern it. Make sure your gun's on.
So there's so many different models of shotgun. Does a guy need a shotgun for pheasant hunting and a shotgun for duck hunting and a shotgun for goose hunting?
Yes,
or is
they
there,
do,
yes,
Joe.
Yes.
You do. So,
yes.
Yeah, you need a lot of guns, Joe.
Because that's what I told
or,
Kathy.
Or are the guns versatile enough now that you can just get away with one gun for everything?
If you ask 100 people, you're going to get 100 different answers. Personally, I have different guns for turkey hunting. I have a different gun for waterfowl hunting and duff hunting. So I'm kind of in that boat that I have a few different guns I like to play around with. But definitely if you want to shoot one gun for everything, you know, like an A5 or a Maxxis would be well suited.
Yeah, I have the A5, and I've been using it. We have an early pheasant season here on the west side, and that was kind of the first time I got to use the gun. I received it last year, kind of at the end of the waterfowl season. And, man, I love that thing. I'm going to use it for all my upland, all my duck hunting, my goose hunting. It's just like, you know, just perfect.
When that Browning A5 Wicked Wings comes with the Invector choke system from Browning there, and so, you know, that alone makes it very, very versatile. But if I had to guess, I bet that full choke tube doesn't come out of your A5 very often, Foster.
and that's the kind of the same thing we were just talking about, patterning your shotgun, knowing how far of a shot you're going to be taking. You know, for pheasants, you got probably, 25, 30-yard shot if they're, you know, really wild and get up, you know, it might be a 40-yard shot. But, improved modified is usually about where I stick at for hunting.
Really? Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that's us out here. You know, if you have, like I said, pheasants that are getting up further, you might want that full choke in.
Or when you got Labrador that's all fired up and jumping birds at 60 yards.
That's Nelly's dog.
Oh, that's right.
Just never quits running, you know. So, Foster, your shot string, are you starting at the back of the bird and painting them? Or how are you getting your shot string to cross that bird? How do you approach that, buddy?
Yeah, so, and that's a great question. A lot of people honestly get very excited, you know, and I do the same thing too, but go out, you know, and a pheasant rooster gets up in front of you and you tend to quickly shoot that first shot and not quite get on the bird. Either you shoot behind them or hit the back end. One thing that I always just try to do is tell people to, you know, remain calm, focus on getting in front of that bird. And so what we usually do, what like my dad's always taught us, is tail, body, head, in front, shoot. And then obviously a good follow through after that. But if you can get in front of that bird, you're never going to be behind them.
It's easy for you to say,
yeah,
stay calm. Bird jumps in front of you and it's like, ah!
Unfortunately, I once had an elk standing there and I led him and he was just standing there and that wasn't good. I didn't stay calm on that one either. We're talking with master wing shooter Foster Barthlow. Foster, I want to talk a little bit about the 2020 Grand American. It is the signature trap shooting event in the country, has been ever since I can remember. Tell us a little bit about, first, what is the Grand American, and then your success in this event, Foster.
Yeah, so the Grand is Amateur Trap Shooting Association, ATA, but you know, we have thousands of shooters that come worldwide for this event. Like you said, it's a signature trap shooting event that's well known in the Americas. Did very well this year. Obviously, with COVID, it was down, but it went good. I ended up second in the singles clay target championship, which is a huge one for me. Ran the 200 out of 200 in the event, and then got in the shootoff. So that was very definitely an honor to win second place in that. And then basically, it's 2 weeks long of shooting. So you have like the prelim week and then you have the finals week. In the prelim week, they have what they call the Super 500 doubles, which is all the doubles events put together, and they give you a overall for that one. I ended up winning that with 498 out of 500 doubles hits. Yeah.
and those doubles.
Yep.
Wow.
And then you go out completely.
What happened to those two?
Speechless. Yeah, what about the two?
What about the
How
two?
Can you miss two, Foster? What's going on there?
Yeah, that was I did my best. And I,
yeah. Now you know how it is to work with these guys, Foster. You can never do any right. But
hey, Foster, you live back in South Dakota, man. Some of the best bird hunting on the planet back there. What's it like for an out-of-state hunter to come back there? Is there a certain corner of the state, you know, you could point people towards or maybe interested in coming back there and shooting some birds back in South Dakota? Because you just have tremendous pheasant hunting, duck hunting, goose hunting. The bird hunting back there is just fantastic. What can you tell our folks out here in Seattle about South Dakota, buddy?
Yeah, there's a lot of great places to go. You know, it's basically what we call East River, the eastern part of the side of the state. And from Pierre, Chamberlain over east, you have a ton of pheasants upland that you can get on, and it's a ton of fun. A lot of people come out every single year just for that experience, because it is truly, like you said, some of the best upland pheasant hunting in the world.
Foster,
I'm not
one of the things.
Away any secret.
No,
you don't need to.
We weren't looking at GPS coordinates, but one of the things.
I'm looking at a picture of your governor right now. Actually, I'm trying to pull her up, but anyway, go ahead, Nelly.
Okay.
I am. Look, no, when are you going to have a Christie Gnome calendar?
No, I know.
Anyway? I mean, we need one. She's pheasant hunting. She killed a deer a couple of years ago. I mean,
there we go.
You know, let's get this calendar going, buddy.
Best looking governor in the country. There's no question about it. So Foster, again, you see how I got to see what I got to work with these guys, but so Foster, one of the things we've seen going on in the country, you know, particularly during these times, is a return to our traditional outdoor pursuits. And so we've got a lot of guys for the first time thinking, hey, you know, I want to go out and go duck hunting or deer hunting or everything. So if somebody's new to wing shooting in particular, how would you start somebody off in the wonderful sport that is wing shooting, duck hunting, pheasant hunting, what have you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously getting the right equipment right away, you know, and it kind of depends on what they want to invest to get into it. We were told by a few friends, you know, buy once, cry once, that kind of philosophy, where get the best equipment right away because it's never going to fail you, or hopefully won't fail you. But yeah, if someone's getting into upland hunting, I would say, you know, get the right shells. You know, and obviously there's different rules, regulations on using lead versus steel if you're hunting public or private. But getting the right shotguns, an A5, Maxis, or your preference. And, yeah, and then going from there, learning different things with upland hunting, you know, it kind of just depends on where people are at. But finding cover, you know, obviously these pheasants need water, they need food. So finding good locations for that, finding good cover where, you know, midday if it's cold out like today for us, it's 32 degrees and snowing. So they're going to be kind of hunkered down and in some of the thicker crops or, you know, thicker places where most people don't want to go. So learning some of that stuff.
I just popped on trapshootingbros.com, which is your excellent website, and you have a tab here under coaching. Okay, so if somebody wants to get, you know, a championship level instruction experience, how do they go about it?
Yeah. Professor? So, if they want to fill out the form there, and that'll come to me, feel free. I will respond to it right away. We'll try to figure out when the next course is going to be. Obviously, it's kind of with the COVID up and down. It's been a little bit tougher knowing exactly when our courses are going to be. But if anything, we can definitely get on the phone. Glad to help out. So it's been fun. The courses have been great. We've had a lot of people very happy with them, learning a ton of things just on, you know, from trap shooting to wing shooting, learning some of the techniques, fundamentals, you know, and that's eye placement, you know, bringing the shotgun up correctly, what your footwork is like. So there's a lot of things that we go over in these courses.
That's the help I need right there, is getting the shotgun up correctly to my shoulder. A lot of times I seat it too low. And then I'm looking at the top of the barrel. I'm looking at the top of the rib instead of right down the rib. And I do it all the time. I'll do it the first couple shots, and I'll readjust. but it's a problem for me, and I never get it seated properly, you know?
And look, you know, a lot of us who do a lot of hunting, I'm sure, could always use a refresher course from a guy like Foster. Go in and make sure you're doing everything correctly, because, you know, I know when I miss a shot – there's a reason, you know. I've done something wrong, you know. Whether it's like you said, Foster, taking the shot before you're on the bird. You know, a lot of times, especially with pheasant or quail or something, it's like bird gets up, you try to shoot so fast, and if you would just take your time and, like you said, relax. So yeah, I'd love to get go through my fundamentals and just make sure everything is, you know, tight. We do it with everything we do, our bows, our rifles. And then we grab our shotguns and we just go out and start shooting.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, no question.
And Foster, there's a great camera out there too. If you look at Shot Cam, I started using that product and it is phenomenal. I'm not even going to lie. I've learned so much on my own swing, you know, and some things that I was doing wrong and ways to improve. Not only do you get really cool footage of your hunt, but you can use that as a learning tool as well.
I don't know if I want to have a bunch of video of me missing stuff. Yeah. I just sit down and watch.
It'd be tough.
Well, those things are pretty affordable too. What are those cameras? Are what, $100 or something, or what? They're priced pretty good.
You know, these ones are a little bit more expensive than that. I think they run $650-ish. Don't quote me, but in what I look at it is in the long term investment. You know, I learned a lot. And it saves me every single time I go out.
So do they actually give you your sight picture?
They do.
Of a shotgun.
Not they do.
You can, wow.
You can change the different turrets or crosshairs on it, or if you don't want any crosshairs, and then it's Wi-Fi, so it connects to your phone, so you can download everything right away. It's helpful.
You can hate yourself right away. That's awesome. That's really good news. Yeah, the speed of electronics right there. He's Foster Barthlow. Go check out trapshootingbros.com, Browning's master wing shooter. Foster, thank you very much. Don't be surprised if we call on you again in the near future.
Thank you, buddy.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Later, all right, Foster.
See you, Foster.
Thank you so much, man.
Later, brother.
All right. Coming up next, the hottest report I heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's RoyRobinsonChevy.com's Really? Where? And it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really?
Where?
It's going back
The island of Tin and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? No way. You gotta tell me. I'm not gonna tell anybody.
The ocean turned red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got him?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonChevy.com's
Really?
Where? Roy Robinson Chevrolet RV will take you anywhere.
Really?
Well, if you loved your 10-speed bike as a kid, you're going to love your 10-speed truck. Fortunately, it's truck month at Roy Robinson Chevrolet. How about a $1,000 accessory allowance when you purchase or lease a 2021 Silverado, Silverado HD, Colorado, or a 2020 Tahoe or Suburban with eligible accessories? Or head on over to Roy Robinson RV, where you're going to find a complete selection of Class A's, Class B's, Class C's, travel trailers, fifth wheelers, toy haulers, pop-ups, and so much more. RoyRobinsonRV.com.
I mentioned earlier in the show, we cover a lot of casts here on the Outdoor Line. This weekend, it's all about the blast.
There you go.
I tell you what, this weather's lining up perfect for the final run of deer hunting season. Whether you're a blacktail hunter or especially mule deer hunting on the other side, it's open through the 27th.
The
weather is perfect.
Yeah.
Some of the best deer hunting weather we've seen.
Decades.
3 decades, maybe more.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been a long – well, I don't know if I've ever seen a weather forecast for the North Cascades, Gardner Mountain in particular, of, you know, minus whatever, minus 10, minus 15. It was middle of the week. They were calling for minus 20 up there. Now, that it's warmed up a little bit, but it's still it's super cold. There's been snow. There was snow up there yesterday. It's driving those big bucks out of the high country, and you've got a great shot this weekend into the final – few days of the season here this next week to tag a really a quality animal.
I'm glad that we're done.
Side.
Oh, so it's going to be so cold up there.
Oh,
I don't want to go up there.
You'll be okay. I'm still experiencing the pain of a Washington deer tag in my pocket. But
and then waterfowl hunt too. Yeah. Talked to Shelby Ross on Wednesday. He texted me first thing in the morning. He's like, I don't know what's going on, but there's a huge wave of mallards that just showed up over here at Potholes. The local bird shoots were good on the opener last weekend. Talked to Kevin John up at Holiday. Said, yeah, a lot of local birds. We've got a bird dog barking out here right now, as a matter of fact. Can you hear that in
the
background?
She's
on point. Go get him. Fetch him.
Gabe Miller down at Sport Co. They had a pretty good shoot in Eastern Washington, but all local birds, mixed birds. We want to see those big northerners coming down, those mallards, some of the maybe the northern pintails coming in. And I tell you what, they're showing up here right now.
Well, we're starting to see the geese. Yep. I mean, seeing plenty of geese rolling in here to Western Washington, and we saw a bunch over on the east side.
Tons
and
of snow
that's
geese.
That's got to be a precursor to all those mallards and pens heading this way,
for
too.
For sure. So it's all about the blast here this weekend. Plus, it's the opener. It's the east side pheasant opener here today on over in Eastern Washington. Perfect weather for that, too. The birds are going to hold tight. Hopefully not run too much for the folks over there on the east side.
We got a runner.
Yeah.
Those filthy pheasant over there are runners, dude.
And they get so low to the ground.
But this is what you need. The best pheasant hunting I've had over – I like to hunt around Moses Lake.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have some weather, and then the birds will hold.
Yep.
Otherwise,
yep.
You better put on your track shoes
because
they will
run miles. Yeah.
Just miles and just keep running.
Well, this weather's perfectly suited for river anglers, too. I mean, you guys came down and saw the same Skagit I did.
Perfect.
Which, the Skagit definitely needs to come down a little bit. Yeah. She's still a little swollen from those last few days of rain. But I tell you what, man, for all those coho, I mean, you remember back in the day, we catch bright coho on the Skagit right through the end of the year.
Oh, for sure.
And like Rob said, the biggest fish show up late.
Especially on the coast.
Yeah.
The coastal fish, those Christmas coho, I mean, they can be in excess of 20 pounds. And where are they in the saltwater? We never see them out in the saltwater, but they come in. I mean, I've caught them in November, early December out there. Just big cranker hook nose cohos, and they're so good to eat.
They are.
Oh, my goodness. They eat like a spring Chinook almost. They're so tasty. So get out there and do it. Now's the time to get out and hit the coast. And it's opening weekend of, for pheasant hunting. A lot of people are going to be deer hunting, duck hunting. It's a good – actually kind of backdoor some of these people and go hit the rivers because they can be pretty quiet out on the coast right now.
And that's a funny thing, too, is yourself, as things cool down, if you – you just look out here on Puget Sound right now and crabbing's open in certain areas and there's really nobody fishing, And
there's so much to do. This time of year is a lot to do. The squidding's great. Great reports this week from, Bubba down at SMI, from Tyler Scrampin down at Point Defiance Boathouse. The squidding is like crazy right
now. When's the last time you sat down over a plate of fresh calamari?
Oh, it's been a while.
Been a while for me, too.
Yeah, it's been a while. But they're a little smaller right now. It's early. I mean, we're October. This thing usually doesn't go till December. this at this level anyway, till December, January, early January, and it's cranking. I think it's just going to keep on going.
I've seen some good. Some overflowing buckets on Instagram.
For sure.
Just piles of squid.
Yep. Got a clam dig next weekend, Halloween, through election night, through the 3rd. So you can get out. There's just an unprecedented number of clams on the coast. You got to wait till next weekend, of course, for that. But, yeah, lots of opportunity right now, whether it be salmon fishing, sea run cutties in the South Sound. They're planting the lowland lakes here again. They're getting trout right now. So if you want to sneak around and do some of that, there's lots of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, and don't forget, I mean, we're going to have that Hood Canal, Hood Sport chum fishery deal going on there, too.
Yep.
And that's
going to
be
coming up.
Yeah, so don't think fishing season ended. I mean, it didn't. I'm definitely looking forward to going and doing that, you know. Kelly Reardon from WDFW has in the past run kind of a clinic down there. And, of course, due to the current stuff, that's not going to happen this year. But still, you know, you can go down to Hood Sport and catch a bunch of chums.
Take your anchovies and on a float.
Yeah. Did you go down there that time, or you hooked them
up with some
bait?
I just got him some bait. Yeah. I wanted to, but it just didn't work out.
Do you
out.
Hook the anchovy sideways so it's horizontal, or does it hang straight up and down? Do you know how they hook them? I think they hook them so they're hanging horizontal under a float, and you don't do anything to it. You throw it out there, and you let it sit there.
I think I'll be calling.
And the chums come by, and they eat it.
Yeah.
I'm going to be calling Kelly Reardon while you guys are gone, leaving me alone for the Halloween show that I got to do by myself
scary
next week.
Halloween show.
Yeah, it's going to be without you guys. It's going to be scary. It's gonna be scary. No, but I mean, that happens most of November, down at Hood Sport.
Yeah. Chico Creek, too, in Silverdale.
Yeah, good call.
Minter Creek, they get them with a float and an anchovy. All these little estuary
areas.
It'll
be interesting to see if the chum numbers are better than we thought they were going to be, like kind of everything else, right? I mean, that's why we have, right now, all these fisheries, the Cowlitz, the Washougal, the Lewis, every place is just plugged with fish.
And again, it goes. Some of it went to that, lack of coastal harvest this year too. Crazy year in a lot of different ways.
We've had some good stuff going on this year.
We have.
It could be in the rearview mirror here soon, and I'm not going to be too worried about it. Get this sucker behind us as quick as we can.
May have to have a cocktail on New Year's Eve. Geez. You just never know.
A lot of stress, man. Yeah, running a charter business in Alaska.
You want
some stress.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and I just started talking with Lisa Killick at Peregrine Lodge, and they're getting things cranked up again. In fact, they're starting to send guys dates. So we'll be having her on a show probably next week too. If you missed any of the show, you can grab the podcast on theoutdoorline.com or on mynorthwest.com. Also on Apple iTunes, you get the podcast right there. You can get a hold of us during the week on social media at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Joe Pyburn, at Rob Ensley. For Matt Nelson back in our Seattle studios, for Joey Pyburn, for Rob Ensley, I'm Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN Seattle.